and the general subject is living and sharing in community. Some of what is said here, Carl has heard before, and Linda, and Lisa has heard it some before, and Nadine, and I'm sure some of the rest of you have too. So in some ways it's not going to be completely new, but I think it will be unique to some of you because of its setting here at Holden. When you look at the blackboard up here, you get some sort of feeling about what you can get when you come to Holden Village. I mean, you can learn how to do drawing with Jack, or pottery, or you can learn how to read Russian novels, or we can learn stuff in our groups together, or in the woodshop, or wherever. And on one level, that is what you get at Holden Village. But there is something else that you may get at Holden Village, and that is, and elsewhere too, but here, I think, in a unique kind of way, there is the possibility here that you'll get a bonus, and that is a good and clear picture of what it means to live in a Christian community. And by community, I mean a fellowship of believers. That can be a parish, that can be a school, that can be a village, that can be all kinds of organizations and structures like your family or your college or whatever. But in addition to the things that you can learn from Jack and from John and from Martin Kretzmann and others, I believe that there's a bonus to be learned here, and that is what it means to live inside of a Christian community. And that is not as obvious a thing. I don't know that we're going to talk about it all that much in the next 10 weeks. It's not as obvious a thing as learning how to make a pot or something. But I believe for your whole life and for your happiness for the 10 weeks that you're here, I believe it can be more important and more crucial than some of the specifics that you will pick up and learn. It can have a tremendous influence, I believe, on your home and on the families that you might someday have, and on the relationships that you have with family members. It can have a tremendous influence on the way that you feel about the people that you go to college or graduate school with, and generally those that you live with. So what we're talking about is what it is to live in a Christian community, and the specific model, of course, for community living that we're going to be talking about is Holden Village. Living for Christian people. And now what I want to do is to start real quickly through this book. If there is one book at Holden that is kind of the Magna Carta of this village, it's this little book of Life Together. This book has been read more often, more times, by more people, and talked about more here than I think any other book ever in the 15 or 16 years of Holden Village. Is this true? Except the Bible.
Except hopefully the Bible.
Right. Thank you. I mean, I just wanted to assume that. Give me a yay if you've known anything about Bonhoeffer's Life Together. Have you heard of this before?
Yay.
Yay. Nay?
Nay.
Okay. Any other nays? All right. Will you wait for just 2 minutes? All the yays? Okay. What happened was, in the 1940s, there were two churches in Germany. The German Christian Church that hung swastikas in the sanctuary, and the Confessing Church that said that Hitler was wrong and was evil. One of the leaders of the Confessing Church, the Rebelling Church, was a man named Dietrich Bonhoeffer, a pastor, a theologian, a man from an aristocratic family in Berlin. His father was the first psychiatrist in the city of Berlin and taught at the University of Berlin. Bonhoeffer formed an illegal seminary of 25 young men in a farmhouse on the Baltic Sea, finally closed by the Gestapo, and Bonhoeffer himself was hung 1 month before the Allied forces finally won victory in 1945. Bonhoeffer had these group of 25 men together for 2 years as an illegal training school, illegal seminary for the Confessing Church. When they got together in this place, they had, not unlike Holden Village, they had to do dishes and they had to go out and pick rutabagas and they had to study and they had music together and they had skits, and all of their life was together, life together. So Bonhoeffer says, how can we stand each other here? Not a question that we sometimes ask here at Holden Village. How can we stand to live with each other? And so he says, the only way we can stand to live with each other is if we understand the biblical guidelines for life together, for living together. So he goes through the scriptures, and he talks about what it takes for us to get along with each other, and what being together in the same place at the same time means. So this little jewel of a book is short and surprising and simple, but just loaded. and you'll find copies of this in the bookstore. And as you read it, you'll be thinking of these 25 men on the Baltic Sea picking rutabagas out in the garden and waiting for the Gestapo to come around the corner to close them down, which finally happened. Okay, Bonhoeffer says that you and I being together in this place is frosting. Normally, Christians are living not with friends but with enemies. The normal thing is not to be here. This is abnormal living. Normal living is to be around no other Christian people at all. So this is a bonus. And we must always look at community, that is congregational life or Christian family life, as a gift from God, not something that we complain about, but rather something that is an extra that God has given us. This is not normal. This is abnormal. This is frosting. The scriptures talk about a scattered people, not a gathered people. We are scattered as disciples, as missionaries, as etc. And so being together in this kind of situation is something that is an extra. And that this extra, this frosting, is something that can always be taken from us. Bonhoeffer and his 25 friends at the illegal seminary on the Baltic Sea were completely aware all of the time that any minute the Gestapo could come in and close them down, which they did. And they all ended up on the Russian front and none of them lived through it. We can best be served, or best understand our life together if we can say that it is first a gift and second something that in fact can be taken from us, that it isn't something to be assumed. This then, second major point, this community is a community that is brought together and held together by Christ. Now, what that means is this, that salvation, that my knowledge of my own sinfulness and God's gift to me is not something that I can think up inside of me. I need you to tell me about Jesus. That means that salvation always comes from outside. I don't dream it up myself. I get it from outside of me, from the disciples, from Jesus, and from you, the communion of saints. The implication of that is that since I need you to tell me about Jesus, we therefore need each other to tell each other about Jesus. So this community is created because we need each other to hear that story. Okay, that's an important point. We need each other to speak the words, the word of the gospel to each other. So the goal of community, the goal of living together here, is to look at each other and to greet each other as bringers of salvation. Now that's not so hard if you look at John. See? You can look at John and say, well, look, he's the director of the village and he's the preacher, and we can say, well, I hear him speak and do Bible studies and speak the word to me. So I look at him and say, well, he's a bringer of salvation, and I like John, and it's nice to be here with John. But other people in the village who never speak the word to you, who never do a Bible study for you, who never do anything for you positively at all, but in fact irritate the daylights out of you, those people are also bringers of salvation in a different kind of way, but still in a very important kind of way. So it's not just the people that are supportive to us, that help us know about the salvation that must come from the outside, but it's also people that just plain drive us crazy, and there's going to be a few of those around that you'll get to meet, you know, too. So we are gathered together by the goal of Christian community is to meet each other as bringers of salvation. Third major point, we don't naturally like each other. Naturally, we dislike each other. That's kind of a good old orthodox pessimism right there, you know. Maybe it's a little strong, but one way to understand the scriptures is, one way to understand sin is to say that sin means we're separated from God, we're separated from each other, and we're separated from ourselves. Therefore, it's okay to say that basically we do not like each other. We begin liking each other when standing between you and me there is Jesus. What creates community is not that I like you or you like me, but rather what creates Christian community is that standing between the two of us, there is the person of Christ and the word that he preaches. So that when I look at you and when you look at me, it's not any qualities in you or in me that we like, but rather it is what Christ has done for both of us that keeps us together. Do you follow that? Give me a yay if you... Yeah, okay. So as I look at someone who either I love here or I kind of irritates me here, as I look at that person with Christ standing in between us and keep that model in my mind, then we are able to be together as a community. Now, next major point. If we will have dreams of what Holden should be, dreams that are not true dreams, true biblical dreams, then those dreams will haunt us and cause us to be sad here. We can, for example, dream that Holden should somehow be the mom and dad we never had, or that Holden should somehow be the lover we never had, that Holden will be a friend that we never had, that Holden could be all kinds of things that we think it should be or we want it to be for us. The beginning of what may be a sad experience for you is to imagine that this place is something that it can never be. So one way to be happy and to grow and to enjoy this experience in community here is by having a clear picture of what your own imaginations are. Now, they're not bad necessarily, but we try very hard to say that it's necessary to separate our own wish dreams about this community from the reality of the community. The reality of the community is that Jesus stands between us. The reality is we confess our sins to each other. The reality is we take communion together. The reality is we don't always like each other, and things like that. So as we set aside our fantasies about what the place is, we're better off. We enter the community then as thankful participants in the community rather than accusers of the community. Because if the community doesn't live up to what I think it ought to be, you know, if Karen and John and Werner and everybody else around here aren't what I think they should be, I become an accuser of the place. Or if you don't like the people who live in your lodge or whatever, and they're not what you thought they should be, then we start accusing the village of being something that it's not. And then we become sad, and we lose the great gift that is here for us. So one of the things that's very helpful is very early in your time at Holden is to become disillusioned with the place. Become disillusioned with me and with your neighbors, and become disillusioned with everybody as quickly as you can. The sooner you get to that point, the better off you are, probably. And then you break through those disillusionments, and then you get to the truth beyond it. And the truth is that we are all sinful, that we're all in need of grace, that we are all bringers of salvation to each other, and that we love each other and like each other because Christ stands between us. So get disappointed early in the week as possible, and then we can move ahead from there. All right. Next major point. That Holden Village or any Christian community, your home, school, family, college, anything, Christian community is not an ideal that we create, but it's a reality in which we participate. Okay, and that one kind of rolls off a little bit, but let's try it again. It's not an ideal that we create, that is, it is not something that we make by either being nice or pretty or pleasant or talented or anything like that. It's not something we build, but rather it is a reality that we move into. It's a real thing that we move into, a real thing that is based on the gospel, a gospel that calls for confession and forgiveness and hope and joy and all of that. So that's another way of saying what I said just a bit earlier about becoming disillusioned earlier. Christian community is not an ideal that we create, but a reality in which we participate. Now, next major point is to, what is this, six? Who's listing them? I don't know. All right. Okay, it's helpful. Bonhoeffer compares two kinds of communities. He says there's a human community and there's a spiritual community. Now, a human community has a number of characteristics, and he outlines them a lot in a lot of different ways. But basically, human community is composed of some of these qualities. One is that there is within human community a tremendous desire for immediate friendship. You get off the bus, and all of a sudden, everybody in this whole place is your great big lost friend. No. Well, it's not true. But we wish it were true somehow. And you will have friends here, and those friendships will be very meaningful and very deep. But there is no immediate friendship in Christian community, the kind of immediate relationships. Another thing in human community is that the tendency is for weak people to be dominated by strong people. That's a characteristic of a human community. Another one is that the weak people are absorbed by the strong. The strong are making all the decisions, are saying all the words, etc., etc. And another characteristic of human community is that human community longs for a savior within the village, for some sort of person that we attach ourselves to in a devotional kind of way. That human community loves to have a Jesus right here on the grounds. Ours lives up in the hotel or something. I don't know where. We don't have a Jesus here, okay? In that kind of way. Now, those are some characteristics of human community. Christian community, on the other hand, invites people to be independent, not to be dominated weak and strong like that, but rather to be independent. Christian community also invites people to be interdependent, which means to say that we are all in need of each other. It's obvious at Dishtim, but that's only a small way in which it's obvious. It's obvious all through the village that we do in fact need each other, interdependence. And Christian community also understands that there may not be any immediate direct human contact, that we're not automatically great close friends just because we're here. Okay. That may happen, but it's not something that we require from it. Now, Bonhoeffer makes the statement that human community is very easy to develop in a few days, but spiritual community takes a long time to develop and is much more difficult. I had a teacher at the seminary who said, can I tell a story about the canoe trip? I'll tell it. I had a teacher at the seminary who said that if you'd let me have 8 junior high school boys and some canoes, and if we could go canoeing up in northern Minnesota for 1 week, at the end of that week, I could make all of those boys promise that never again in their entire life would they ever kiss a girl. Be very easy, he said. Human community is very easy to develop. You know, your experience may be on 3-day retreats or 3-day conventions or 3-day something or another. Bonhoeffer believes that that's not hard to do at all. In fact, a very easy thing to do. But that long-term living together, where you have to take out the garbage and you have to do dishes and you have to live with each other, that's something else again. Short-term community and long-term community. Okay. 7. Community means a day, a part of our day together and a part of our day alone. The day together is obvious. We're having a date together now. We eat together. We do dishes together. We worship together. That's a part of the rhythm of a day. But in a Christian community, the day together also requires a day apart, a day of isolation and a day of and sometime during the day when you are not with each other. We have solitude days. Perhaps we don't have enough solitude days. It's hard to schedule them. But one of the things that will be beneficial for your life here is if you have private time and somehow resist what is kind of a magnetic draw to always be with other people. To be alone this is a good place to be alone. And there is a rhythm of solitude and togetherness in a Christian community that will give you some sort of refreshment. Bonhoeffer talks of different kinds of ministries within Christian communities, and this is very important. He said that the beginning of the destruction of Christian community is when we start to figure out which one of us will be the greatest. And there arose a reasoning among them. Remember in the Gospels, the disciples are at the table, and they want to sit next to Jesus. They want to sit next to the head man, you know, up high at the table. And there arose a reasoning among them which of them should be the greatest. Bonhoeffer believes that when there arises a reasoning among them which of them should be the greatest, then the community starts to disintegrate. So, he says, there are different types of ministry. And all of these ministries are important. And he lists a number of them. Now, real quickly, they are these. The ministry of being quiet. We do not speak ill of each other. even under the pretense of helpfulness. Gossip, well, you know, we know gossip isn't helpful, but sometimes we justify gossip by saying, well, I really have that person's well-being at heart. Well, sometimes I'm not so sure that I do when I do that. Yeah. The ministry of silence means that we listen maybe more than we talk, and that listening is the first gift that we can give to somebody else. Listening not so much with how we will respond, but listening just to listen. I find myself when I listen to somebody, I'm already thinking up the answer. You do that at all? I'm already thinking about what the response should be. Bonhoeffer encourages us to listen with no response. And that's the first ministry in a village like this, is to be a listener. The next ministry is the ministry of meekness. St. Paul said he considered himself the greatest of sinners. And Thomas A. Kempis says that never think that thou hast made any progress until thou lookest upon thyself as inferior to all. I don't suppose you came here to feel inferior. You know, but one way in which community happens is, along with listening, is to say, no, I am the least of all here. It is appropriate and right that John does dishes, and I don't think that you realize that, don't you? That dishes are yours to do as much as any of us or all of us. We all have different functions here, but none of us have a function any higher than the rest. The ministry of meekness. Ministry of helpfulness. Bonhoeffer makes a good point that no job is insignificant. When we think about how dependent we are on each other, it really is important for us to know that the kitchen, that without the kitchen, we would not be able to eat, but they wouldn't be able to prepare the food unless somebody cleared the road, but somebody couldn't clear the road unless somebody fixed the machinery, and they couldn't fix the machinery unless somebody hauled the diesel fuel up on the boat, up on the dock. You know, I mean, it's a great big gigantic circle, and to somehow think that one part is of less value or less importance than another is just not possible. If one part would fall apart here of the village, we'd all start to be in trouble, obviously. So the people going down the road today are doing great ministries. And one way to see a parish, the value of a parish life, you know, congregational life, is to see how exciting it is that there are a few people who will do dishes after every potluck. I mean, that's a marvelous ministry. And never to disparage that, either in a parish or in a situation like this, that all those ministries are very important. And then the ministry of bearing is another one, putting up with each other's faults. The next ministry, and that's not easy, because we're with each other all the time. We eat with each other all the time. You get irritated after a while. The ministry of proclamation is one of the last ministries. And Bonhoeffer makes a point that the person who would be speaking the word of God to another person must first do all the rest. Listen, serve, bear, all the rest. And then finally comes the ministry of proclamation. Okay, those are some words from Bonhoeffer, and there's a whole lot more in here, and how much time did that take? Not too bad. I don't know if we want to stop here, or should we just move right into the psychology one?
I'd like to add something.
Yeah.
About the human community and the spiritual community.
Yeah.
Obviously, there are characteristics of the human community rising to the fore all the time. There are people that naturally take over leadership. There are,
yes.
There are a couple other things you mentioned.
Yes.
And I presume there's always a tension between those.
I would think
which we have to deal with.
Yeah.
Right? Is that?
I don't think there is.
There are aspects of human community in the Christian community, obviously.
When the disciples got together for dinner, I mean, if anywhere there should have been the possibility of a truly spiritual community, it was when Jesus was at the head of the table.
Mm-hmm.
But even at that table, they were shucking and jiving for position, you know. So, I mean, that's, yeah, it's a tension.
And Judas was falling.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also wish there were clearer words. I mean, I think he makes clear in the book what he means.
than spiritual and human?
In the world you have domination over one another. It shall not be so among you. That's what he's talking about.
Yes.
But a Christian community is at least a human community. I mean, it is a confusing phrase. We mm-hmm. are a human community. Meaning,
yes.
I mean, a Christian is at least a humanist.
At least.
And to somehow feel badly when there are some human aspects to the community. That isn't what he means at all.
No.
So it's a little hard to grab that one.
No.
What did you say, Todd?
They have to overlap.
Yeah.
Because
sure.
I say it's humanistic. It's not because the human community doesn't make it all bad.
Oh, no.
Right? It's humanistic nature.
Right. Yeah.
Goes into the spiritual.
Okay.
Yeah. I think for me, the way that he highlights it in the book, if I recall, it's when he says that it's impossible to have direct Christian contact with another person. No such thing as direct contact with another person in a Christian way. Christ is our contact point. I can't remember exactly how he said it. When he said that, I thought, no. You know, uh-huh. I don't want it to be that way. It can't be that way.
Yeah.
That's his argument. And then at the same time, he counters it by talking about how we must not think in terms in ideal terms.
Yeah.
So he obviously knows that all these things are coming up all the time. In fact, he's the one who says it first. So.
If there was one plea that he made to his 25 students in this illegal seminary, it was, let's have a real place, let's not have it a pretend place. Christian community is real, it's not pretend. And that means it doesn't float on a vapor of spirituality. It doesn't pretend, you know. It is real. And all through his writings, he's calling for real stuff as opposed to pretend stuff. One thing I didn't mention that he says, and I'm reminded of it because somebody the other day said that to me, that the sharing of the peace of the Lord at communion time, the hugs, they said, I'd rather like that. and the person said, I maybe won't say it exactly correctly, but they said, I maybe like it for the wrong reasons. I like it because I can hug somebody then, and I can't hug them on Wednesday because somebody would wonder what's going on. You know? But Sunday night I can hug them. And I don't think that's the wrong reason at all. I think it's a wonderful thing that we can do that. Bonhoeffer connects to that when he says that Christ came in a body, and that we greet each other as bodies, and that that's not bad, but that's good. That we should not be ashamed of the need that we have for each other's physical presence. We should not be ashamed, I hear him saying, that on Sunday night we could use about 10 good hugs, and that's just fine, and there's nothing wrong with it. That's a part of spiritual, that's real, you know, spiritual community too. Okay. Is that okay? Keith's grinning, the rest of you are kind of puzzled, I think. Okay, Bob McAllister's The Psychology of Community. This takes a different slant, but it's very interesting. And you'll have a chance to read this. McAllister says that the tension, psychologically, the tension within a place like this is between you being an individual and having your mind turned to jello and being a silly putty, being formed by the group or being an individual. I don't know that some of your relatives and friends and people that you know, especially after Jonestown, were just a tad worried about where you were going if they didn't know. I mean, I would think so. Yeah, I don't know if that's the case or not. But I would expect that some folks would say, what's going on? Why are you going up there to allow yourself to be manipulated and to have your individuality taken from you and to be pushed like silly putty into somebody else's mold? McAllister says that the tension in community is the tension between being your own person and being a group person. Follow that? Between being you who you really are and this, and then having others kind of mold and shape and push you around over here to try to make you into something that you're really not. I don't know if that's the case or not. But I would expect that some folks would say, what's going on? Why are you going up there to allow yourself to be manipulated and to have your individuality taken from you and to be pushed like silly putty into somebody else's mold? McAllister says that the tension in community is the tension between being your own person and being a group person. Follow that? Between being you who you really are and this, and then having others kind of mold and shape and push you around over here to try to make you into something that you're really not. So he talks about that, and he says that there's a tension between those two things. He believes that if we come into a group in an immature way, that we will not be able to give to the group. That if we come in needing, for example, a parent or a lover or whatever, if we come in needing that, then we won't be able to give as much to the group as would be good for us. But if we can come in giving, then we will take. In other words, if you come in dependent and weak, he thinks that there may be some problems in that you'll want others to give you a personality. But if you come in with your own, there will be a very active and exciting give and take between the group and yourself. And in that kind of tension, back and forth, give and take, there will be wholeness, and there'll be good things for you. One of the goals for any kind of group is that your individuality and your talents must be preserved. They must be maintained, and any attempt on the part of the rest of us to shape and form you into a groupthink model must be resisted. And if it gets too strong, that if all this pressure to think alike and to be alike, if that happens here, McAllister says the only thing you have to do is just get out. You know, you can't let people push you around like that. So that's important. If the group tries to give you identity, it's important that you leave the group. Then he says about, he makes an interesting comparison to some experiments. Maybe you've heard about this thing where they put somebody in a room and they would deprive this person, guinea pig, of all sensory stimulation. No sound, no color, no changes of temperature. You ever heard about experiments like that? Where it's a box, you know, and where there's fixed lighting and fixed heat, but there's nothing that ever happens inside of this box. It's just a white void, and you just kind of sit or lay in there on the bed, and there's nothing going on ever, and you see how long you can take it. One of the things that they discovered is that you start dreaming up your own stimulations. You start hearing bells. You start seeing colors that aren't there. He makes the comparison between being in a community where you will have real stimulation, real people saying real things to you about what's going on, and not a pretend world. He thinks that if we're in a place where we have no true stimulation, with like conversation that Karen mentioned the other day, and all kinds of different things going on to us, that we start dreaming up our own world here. And when we do that, we're in big trouble. The solitary person, he says, has no way to educate themselves. The solitary person starts to dream up things about what's going on. Another defense mechanism he sees that can take place in community, psychological defense mechanism that can happen, is that we will, if we're somehow disappointed with the community, we'll find one friend who agrees with us, spend all of our time talking to that one friend about how awful everybody is to us, and they will be happy. Because we have a friend, and they're unhappy, and we're unhappy, and we'll be unhappy together. And everybody else is shut out. That's one way of coping when we get unhappy, he said, is to reduce the number of people that we have to talk to. He then says that a thing that Bonhoeffer says too, and that the need for personal love cannot be satisfied by a group. In other words, you and I need somebody to love, maybe we don't. I don't know, that's an assumption. But the idea that we can be loved by a group as opposed to a person, yeah, he doesn't buy that. He doesn't think it's possible. And so if somehow we want the group to love us, then we'll obviously be disappointed. He lists many different kinds of communities and gives characteristics of 6 or 7 different kinds of villages. And I'll just briefly list them and you can read them in more detail. One kind of community is a fantasy community. It's a fantasy village. And this is a village that exists only in the mind of the person. It's kind of like the person who has 2 kitty cats and a dog, and that's their community. And the fantasy is that the kitty cats and the dog are a family. And they have conversations and they eat together and they go shopping and watch TV and everything. And it's all in the mind of the person. But they believe it sincerely, that this fantasy is for real. There is no interaction with any other human beings. The most extreme example of a fantasy community is a schizophrenic, a person who has created their own interior world and they visit with each other inside of their own interior world. But it's none of it's very real. Then another kind of community is the comfort community. This is the snob club. Delta House was for all the... yeah, and okay, what was the frat next to Delta House?
Alpha Beta House.
That's a grocery store in California. Well, he sees like a fraternity, a snob club of some kind, is a comfort community. There is, within a comfort community, an imagined degree of excellence. We kind of pretend that we're all better than what we really are. It's imaginary. There is a disdain for all people who disagree with us, or who somehow don't look like us, or don't act like us.
Is that Delta House or the other one?
No, that's the other one. Delta House is, no, yeah, Delta House isn't that, is it? Delta House welcomes all the losers of the world. Yeah, the misfits of the world, and gives them identity. So, or at least, no, they were their own identity. Okay, so that's another kind of community, the comfort community. Now, the comfort community often is disgusted with everybody else about how,
it's a country club.
Yeah, everybody else is just so disgusting, except us, of course.
That's the way Delta House felt, though.
That's true. Part of the time they were there.
Like in Bernie's father's hair last night, they were all kind of...
Yeah.
Comfort community?
Yeah.
Third kind of community he calls it a disintegrating community. It's falling apart. The reason it's falling apart is that I want you to solve my problems, and you want us to solve yours. And the more that we work on that, that's our goal for being together. And the longer we stay together, the more disintegrated we all become, and finally the whole thing is going to collapse. Fourth kind of community is the loosely structured community. This community has no goals, it has no interests, it clings to each other more than bands together. An example of it would be the hippie movement of the 60s. That's kind of old, but it's a loosely structured subculture, and you don't have to be living in the same proximity or with each other or anything like that, but the idea is that we find fellowship because we're all lost. The only thing we have in common is that we don't have anything in common. We're all lost. That's the structure of the loosely structured village. Another kind of community is the rigid community. This community has no diversity, many rules, strict authoritarian situation. Either you believe everything that's said or you have to leave, and everyone must be a true believer in the authoritarian strict village. And the examples of that abound, I guess.
Hitler.
Yeah. Brown shirts or Ku Klux Klan. Possibly. Can you name some other?
Or some of the sects like that, with Jonestown falling into
sure.
That?
Some of the older, the Scarlet Letter, that community of the early Christians in America?
Yeah.
In some ways, they were really strict.
Yeah.
Some like Mennonites. Well, maybe not that, but like the Amish, Pennsylvania Dutch, they're they're loosening up, but obviously
strict clothing rules and
social.
Yeah. Another type of community is the mothering community. I don't know why I didn't say fathering community, but it's the mothering community, where we are not asked to be mature, but we really are allowed and invited to be as childish as possible, and we just get taken care of. Really, we get tucked in bed, and all that good stuff.
Yeah. St.
Olaf. St. Olaf. Is that what St. Olaf is? I didn't know. I never.
Sometimes they teach
it. Okay. In conclusion, McAllister says that there are genuine communities and there are phony communities. There are communities that give you good things, and there's communities that won't give you a thing. There are communities that will sap your strength from you and take your personality away from you. There are others that will invite you to have that grow and become stronger. He believes that the stronger we are coming in, the more we will take out of the community and the more that we will be able to give to the community. The community provides opportunity to improve where we are imperfect, and also gives us an opportunity to give to somebody and to something beyond ourselves. And so that's real briefly what McAllister does. John's read this McAllister paper for many years, I think. Anybody want to comment on any of this or direct some questions to that? Or
I suppose it again can be said that there are some aspects of all of that probably in this community, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm thinking of mothering aspects. I feel very mothered at times.
Mm-hmm.
Authoritarian aspects are there.
You talk to your cat?
Talk to your cat.
We have tiger in our house. We're getting more and more cats here.
But I suppose that maybe the important thing is to sort of be aware of the dangers of starting to fall over into one camp and just go whole hog. One way.
When you're talking about Bonhoeffer, he said that a person in the Christian community should be quiet and meek. But here, McAllister says the worst thing a person can do is be dependent and weak.
Uh-huh.
What's the difference a little bit?
Yes, it is. What is the difference?
Yeah. Let me see.
Bonhoeffer's meekness doesn't have so much to do with being kind of jello. It has to do with an accurate assessment of oneself. Does that help?
Well, and Bonhoeffer is saying that in the context of when I'm weak, I'm strong. When we are weak, then Christ makes us strong. It's not our strength, it's Christ that gives us.
You're strong on his authority.
Yeah. You still subject yourself to your brothers and sisters.
The last thing Bonhoeffer was personally was a weak person. I mean, he was disciplined, unbelievably disciplined. Worked 18 to 20 hours a day, knew many languages, played the piano, got exercise, he painted, he wrote music, read theology. I mean, he's just unbelievably disciplined man. But he says of himself and of others, I will be meek, because that's right, because I am the least of all. And it wasn't any sort of phony thing he was saying about himself. It was true for him. It's kind of a paradoxical thing.
Kind of symbolized by the fact that he went to the gallows.
Yeah.
Or in front of the firing squad or whatever.
Yeah. Holden is big enough, and you are strong and flexible enough to, so that this is, I believe, this extremely diverse community. That I sometimes, like Karen, I want a mothering community, and I believe that Holden provides that. When some days that's what I need.
Yeah.
And I don't feel badly at all when I feel that way about Holden, when I want it to be that for me. So I think that this is a very, very strong place. I see it as a very strong place where lots of different needs can be accepted and embraced and talents shared. It certainly isn't a one-tune place.
Along that same line, I think these different communities and like defenses that are built up, to a small extent, they need to be there too. And McAllister seems to be strong and female person.
Yes.
You know, kind of against the group thing, but I think part of being your own person too can be, at times, being part of the group.
I think you'll see when you read the article, he does think community living is a step above individual living in the way of growth and maturity. I mean, it really is a possibility to grow, so that he does not put down community living. He does give you great reservations if you were hoping that the community would give you your identity instead of you growing, finding your identity there. We try to say this in lots of ways. Holden is a good place to come to only if it's a good place to leave.
Right.
Beware of any place where when someone's been there, they talk the same as everybody else who's been there, that there's an in vocabulary, and you know they've been to a certain place because there are key phrases. Beware of a place where people function better when they're there and are less able to function when they're away from there. They didn't grow. He's saying some things that I think are generally part of the spirit of Holden and the spirit of a place that tries to be a place of renewal and not a place where you run from either yourself or reality or the fact that most of the time we as Christians are dispersed,
mm-hmm.
who understand it as frosting and celebrate that. That's great. You
sure.
don't have to put that down.
Uh-uh.
Jim Carroll, Paulus Priest, friend of mine, has a poem. He thinks a much better description for Christian community is it's a conspiracy. It's people who breathe together. That's what conspiracy means. I mean, that really is what we're called to be. And that when community is not conspiracy, when it's people clutching one another, he has one line in a poem, the next time you pass a community, pity it. And then goes on to our call to breathe together, to be a conspiracy. So there's lots of ways that this is said. It doesn't at all put down the real possibilities of life together. It names some things that seem to be communities that don't quite make it. It's like Karn said when St. John wrote to the Church of Laodicea, to the Church of, you know, those letters to the churches in Revelation. Every church is some of each of those.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the whole point. Kind of watch out that you don't tip too much in one of those that doesn't make it. I think the greatest tendency is the mothering one. Those who are a little stronger mother those who are weak, and nobody grows, he says.
Yeah.
The greatest thing is that we affirm one another and don't ever confront one another in love. Then you don't grow.
Yeah.
I mean,
somebody said to me that something about, oh, you're working at Escapist Village.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the dumbest thing I ever... They've never been here, I'll tell you that. it's not Escapist Village.
I thought it was Sprout City.
I've heard that too, Sprout City.
They have a short growing season. They grow fast.
Right, in the kitchen. Pass out the
one other comment. It is dated. It's 1967. He gave that paper at the Liturgical Conference Convention, which is a Roman Catholic convention, so that the things you have to watch for in there, just don't let them disturb you. It is 1967, so Vietnam is very much part of what he's talking about. Secondly, it's all heavily Roman Catholic in its illustrations and the assumptions that a lot of the listeners are priests and nuns and people who live together in orders like Franciscans. And
mm-hmm.
I mean, you just have to be aware of the context of where McAllister gave that talk.